Hey everyone, thank you for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. We are here with Michael Broughton, CEO of Altro. Altro is a platform that helps people build credit through non-traditional data. Michael, thank you so much for joining the show. I'm really excited to dive into your background and what you're doing at Altro and get into all that fun stuff. But, you know, jumping in right now, what were you doing before you started Altro?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and appreciate you for having me on the show. Before Altro, I was in college, actually. I was going through my sophomore year, I believe, of college at the time. Funny enough, the story of Altro originated from my struggles of getting through college and actually, you know, getting a loan for college.
Yeah.
So after that frustration, I ended up going from going to classes to focusing on the company a little bit more.
Yeah. What frustrations were you dealing with in particular?
Yeah, I came from a pretty big family. I was fortunate enough to be one of the first people in my family to go to a big school like USC and didn't realize that this came with a heavy bill on it. You know, I got accepted. I was super excited. Then realized that I owed $10,000 on my tuition and didn't really know what to do.
Right? Yeah.
So after looking at every single loan possibility out there and getting denied to most, I realized that, you know, it was really hard for me to get the financial tools needed to actually start my college journey. Not a single person actually approved me for a loan for the $10,000 deficit I had.
Wow. So, I mean, not to dive into too much personal topic, but where did you end up getting the finances you needed if you weren't able to get approved for a loan?
You know what? I called the university every day until they paid for my tuition for it.
Wow.
I still know the number by heart at USC. I don't know if that's a good, interesting fact or not, but I called literally every day until USC helped me out of the hole. But if it wasn't for that persistence, you know, I was in a situation, even my classes were locked.
Right? Yeah.
I couldn't stand it for classes. So, you know, luckily I got out of the situation, but I can only imagine how many other people have been in that situation that didn't start college.
Yeah. And was credit the biggest factor that, you know, these lenders wouldn't accept you and lend you money to pay for your classes?
Yeah, I had no credit, right? Like I never had the card. I had, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. And because there was no way to identify whether or not I was good, banks and financial institutions would rather say, you know, we'll push them aside than actually help them out getting their first tool. And I couldn't really get a guarantor or, you know, there was no one in my ecosystem, right? And normally it's like, if your parents have great credit, you'll have great credit. If your parents have bad credit, you'll have bad credit.
Yeah.
And that cycle kind of creates a societal gap between those who have opportunities and don't.
Yeah. So is outside of, you know, you having good credit or your family network, people around you, what are other ways students get over this kind of barrier? Or are there any ways?
That's the issue. It's crazy, right? There's this thing called the Credit Card Act of 08. The creating time to leave. And it really started in 2007. And there was another one that passed in 1999. These were consumer protection laws that were pretty much in an effort to help people, you know, get into credit a little bit safer. Advertently, it actually limited credit access for a lot of young adults. The Credit Card Act of 08 literally says that credit card companies, financial institutions can't actually even market on college campuses or to anyone below the age of 21, which means that if you are 19, 20, about to start college or in that moment where you need a financial tool, not only are banks not allowed to market to you, but 9 times out of 10, you're going to have to rely on someone else who has good credit to kind of buy you into the system. It makes credit flow way more exclusive than what it should be. So right now, if I was, you know, back in college and Altro didn't exist, I really don't know how I would get my first card.
Yeah. No, I was fortunate to, I was like working at a job and sort of somehow, can't remember exactly, but it was during the application process, I was able to get a credit card. It was a credit union who had a specific program and a limit. And like, there were so many different factors and restrictions that I had to abide by, but I was finally able to get a credit card. And it actually now in retrospect, you know, set me up to have access to different means. But tell me about Altro and how that's kind of changing the dynamic within access.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, going back to what you just said, it's so ironic how difficult that first card or that first financial tool is.
Yeah.
Like, no explainer ever. You get approved or I know I'm going to get approved, right? It's so crazy just how much of a gap that is. And that's really where Altro focuses its energy at, is we have dedicated our company and our team and our mission to solving that gap, to making it very obvious on what you have to do as a consumer to go from I don't have credit to I know I'm going to get this credit card or this financial tool or this loan for college, right? And once you create that transparent gap, that educational tool, that 0 to 1, you've just solved a bridge for millions of people to actually get into financial tools without the dismay and the worry and the fear of it, right? So we start with subscriptions, right? Everyone has a Netflix, a Hulu, a Spotify.
Yeah.
We'll put them all in a financial tool, a revolving line of credit to help people build credit using their subscriptions. There's no credit check. You don't have to have previous credit. It doesn't matter who you are. Mm-hmm. As long as we can make sure, A, you're a real person, and B, you have a Netflix, you can start building credit, which is awesome.
Wow. What are the mechanisms that allows you to do that? Because I feel like there's so many, you know, different, not gridlocks, but different hoops you have to jump through. I mean, I know like for me, I was able to build some credit off of like my gas and electric bill, but you know, there was so much that I had to give them information wise, like social security and, you know, my date of birth, where I was born. I mean, there was some crazy information they asked me, my the name of my first pet for security reasons. I don't know what that information is really about, but yeah, how does that mechanism work within using subscriptions now to build credit?
Yeah, we actually work with all three bureaus to report your data to your credit file. So everyone has this public credit account, credit file that says what your score is, your accounts, your lines, and we create that for people who haven't had a credit score before or haven't interacted with the bureaus, and we approve it for those who already do have one, but it may not be good enough to get a financial product, or if they want a better financial product. Maybe they want to discount the rate on their mortgage by a couple points by increasing their score, whatever it may be. We actually take, you know, after we verify you're a real person, so we make sure you know your name and where you live and all that's accurate. We then just tie your subscriptions to this revolver, and the app explains all of it beginning to end. Yeah. And we start reporting it to bureaus.
Wow. So is it just like some kind of data bottleneck that previously existed, but now, you know, you've kind of found, I don't want to say a loophole, but a workaround to add more information to these credit bureaus to then build credit?
Yeah, I would say the loophole is really that financial institutions don't really have a means to operate with people who don't have credit, right? Mm-hmm. And this is just pure capitalism, economics, whatever word you want to put in there. But if I am Bank of America and there's millions of people out there who have a great credit score, has a lot of finances, they're traveling all the time, I want to work with them, right? I know that they have money. I know they're a real person. I know that they can use my tools, very little risk. But when you look at 86 million Americans who have never had access before, you don't know where they are in their financial story. You don't know where, like, you don't know who they are. It's a risk, right? And banks and financial institutions would rather ignore these people just from an economic sense and focus on this population that they know is real. And, you know, this would be fine and dandy if, you know, the history of America didn't have bias in it, right? If everything was fair game and we were all equal people, then no problem. But the moment that you've enacted any level of bias, you've enacted bias in your decisioning on who gets credit and who doesn't. And you can see that in the numbers, right? I think it's like 85% of African Americans get denied on their first credit application.
Wow.
The same is for women. Same as for people in Hispanic communities. It's insane just how much of a disparagement there is, right? And that's just because of our history.
So. Yeah. With companies like Altro, do you think that there's going to be, it sounds like, you know, it's like them, the excuse would be safety, or, you know, it's like, you know, there's less risk in approving these individuals because of their history. Even though there's an opportunity to build history, there's no way. So it's this like, you know, never ending loop. Are companies like Altro giving more data, giving other types, you know, revenue incentives or subscriptions or data around that, pushing it to these bureaus? Do you think that'll allow more access, not only to at the individual level, but from the, you know, financial institutions to, you know, even reach a broader audience? Because it seems like it benefits both at this point.
No, you're exactly on it. And this is the first time that you're seeing Wall Street, The Hill, and the community all play into the same ballpark, right? Yeah. And I can explain all three. From the Wall Street's perspective, you just said, if we can take 86 million people and show these are the people who are great actors, these are the people who aren't, or these are the people who want to build credit, these are the people who want to stay as far away as possible from the credit system, the financial institutions can now work with less risk, right? They're like, hey, we can give these people our financial products because Altro already showed us that they're real people. They're looking for credit products. They're paying their loans back, right? And that gives people a second chance or maybe even a first chance into the system. From, you know, the Hill perspective, we're helping people. The government has tried really hard to help, but maybe just hasn't done the best job. There's so many initiatives and projects and opportunities that, you know, our government has launched, but it doesn't really solve the root problem of accessibility. It's like that quote, like, if you teach a man to fish rather than giving them a fish, right, you know, we're actually teaching people how to fish, which is
great. Yeah.
And community perspective, there's so many people, so many edge cases where we actually have changed lives, right? Yeah. We have had members who were in a divorce and, you know, lo and behold, divorces can hurt your credit by a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, they had their score taken down by 100, 200 points. And we help them get their score back up so that they can go get a new apartment. Or, you know, we've had people, you know, unfortunately, have been in like abusive households, mm-hmm, where, you know, the husband is like the breadwinner of the family and you can't really escape the situation because you can't get a job. And you can't get a job because you don't have a credit score, which is crazy that a credit score is used to underwrite your job. But regardless, yeah, how do people build their credit score in those situations so that they can break out of those family issues? So many situations across the spectrum, from financially acumen to people just wanting to learn what finances are, really just helping a lot of people. So
I love that. From the community level, that the accessibility piece is so important. I was talking to another founder and they were allowing people to have the access to make or to get rewarded based on purchases they made that were carbon friendly. And it's like all these initiatives aren't, you know, they're pushed by private businesses to allow people to do what they want to do. And then when you give people the accessibility, it automatically compounds on itself and grows. So it's incredible to see that from all perspectives, you know, Ultra is really influencing people to you know, productively pay more, get more incentives, companies to make more money, access more individuals. I'm curious, you know, in being that you're so involved in credit and it's such an interesting, you know, phenomenon. I think a lot of people understand it, don't understand it. We sometimes get why the scores go up and down, but when there's like some kind of financial, I guess, mishap, I don't even know what you would say, but like in 2008, a lot of people who, you know, defaulted on their houses and then had to rebuild their credit, they're not able to make, you know, or go over this hump. What are some ways credit really benefits you? And what are some ways that you think it really limits certain individuals?
Yeah, man, there's so many edge cases. I think in terms of the basics, right, to get an apartment, to get a car, to get a job, need a credit score for part of the diligence. In terms of any upward mobility, in terms of financial tooling, you need a credit score. The average cost of just living is decreased at like a percent level. And I don't want to quote it because I don't know the number exactly, but there's a great difference in having a 650 versus a 750 score and how much you pay just to live, right? Also, there's even more protections like credit allows you to do chargebacks, right? This is the small stuff. Like if you have fraud on your card and it's a debit card, it's much harder to get your money back than if it's a credit card. There's protections there. You can manage your cash flow. There's just so much that comes with credit. And you're so right that 08 kind of scared families into saying credit's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's a very common thing in Black communities that like you don't touch credit.
Yeah.
Credit has negative connotations. It has debt. It has high interest rates, it has loan sharks, it has payday lending, like all these things, like even buy now, pay later puts people in a weird situation with their finances.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of companies focusing on empowerment. So I think we really double down on that and the importance of credit and just what it brings to you.
I love that. What kind of traction are you seeing now that, you know, you've built Ultra, you're reaching all different, I would say the triad of who you're working with. Where is Ultra? Where are the numbers? How much has it grown in the last year? Give me a little bit more information about who you're working with, who you've affected, and where you're kind of looking to increase your effectivity.
Yeah, so we've gone viral twice, which is amazing. We've been top 10 in the App Store a number of times, which has been great. But we've been really purposeful on our onboarding experience. And when I say that when we first launch products, we onboard people one by one to make sure that they're getting what we expect and they understand the product. If they don't, we go back to the drawing board, we rebuild. We really take our time in making sure that we're delivering the right customer experience. So we've done things like reporting rent to the bureaus. We've explored the world of subscriptions. And there's even more on the timeline that we could talk about coming into Q4 that we've really been testing with our audience. And we have a number of super users who are committed to just like testing, letting us know if this is what the community needs or not. But it's led to us having a lot of sustainable growth. I think our lowest cost is actually any marketing dollars. We don't really have a marketing budget, actually. It's solely just on innovation and tech, because what we're building is not out there currently.
Same. That's amazing. I talked to another founder and he recommended a book for me called Contagious. And I'm still in the midst of reading this book, but he was talking about, or the book talked about, that the best marketing tool or customer acquisition tool for any business or anything that needs to gain any amount of traction is word of mouth. So it's like, we think about this going viral constant, but really it's just, there's so much work that happens offline. He was like 7% of the outreach or of how much that goes viral is actually happening online. Like how much of that community is discussing it goes online. Everything else is word of mouth, like person to person. And so it's incredible to see that you have super users. I'm sure they're huge advocates for your tool. How do you maintain that relationship with those super users to not only learn about what the community cares for, but also to make those different product decisions? Because I think all companies have, you know, their main client base, but struggle, or main customer base, but struggle to really get the information they need to then make, you know, the correct product decisions. How do you maintain that relationship with those users?
Yeah, a lot of calling. I mean,
yeah.
I have talked to more users this year than I've talked to anyone else in my life. I am dedicated to just making sure I have a connection with people. And you know, luckily I get to wear the CEO hat. So yeah. People actually do want to talk to me when they get to talk to the CEO. But I just cold called people and I'm like, hey, look, it's Mike. I just want to know how our app is working for you. And, you know, people honestly are receptive. They, you know, I try to call after work hours because most of us are on a 9-to-5 schedule. But people love to talk, and people love it when you build something that's meant for them and they get an input on it. It just makes such a big difference. Like we launched a hoodie campaign where each quote that goes onto the hoodie, each time we cycle the hoodies, is one from our members, actually. So just small stuff like that really goes a long way.
I love that. What are some of the biggest risks that Ultro faces today?
Tech innovation is costly.
Yeah.
I think that we are really at the forefront of seeing a societal change in the definition of credit. Like truly, I don't say that just to say it. I think that there are a lot of government campaigns. There's a lot of startups and a lot of money flowing into equitable access. And that's also happening in the world of finance. And the smallest innovations lead to the biggest markets in this space. A friend of mine, his name is Sheridan, is working on a company called LendTable, where, you know, they help people match their 401k. Something that people never thought of. It's a simple loan company, right? But it's just the impact is just so grand based off of just how they perceive market. So I think we're seeing this change happen in real time, and it's exciting to see us be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah. What's the long-term vision for Ultro?
Long-term, I think that I want to make this app controlled and owned by our community. We've been purposeful about our investors and our audience in an effort to make sure that one day this app is out of my hands, is in the community hands, to the point where if the community says we need to do this, it starts getting built, right? Like they become the CEO. And it honestly feels like that right now already. Honestly, I feel like I have multiple bosses, but I community trust is something that you can gain quickly, but lose even faster. And yeah, we grow really slowly. And I think that if we can become entrusted to that level, it would just mean the world. It would change the way that we think about credit. It would give so many people access. The impact, the social impact of what we would be doing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
When you say you know, the community kind of drives the product, how do you ensure that that happens? You know, I know like with Web3, for instance, right? How it's built is decentralized. So, you know, the users, you know, actually influence the decisions that are made by different, you know, projects and protocols that are out. But, you know, being that this is a Web2 project, and so that it seems like there might be a little bit more work or maybe some creative work that allows the community to have their input and have it heard. How are you fostering that community to be able to one day have that reality?
Yeah, the first step is our values. Our first value in the company is that the member drives and we pave the roads.
Yeah.
So where we make any product decisions, we actually have to get member approval on it, which is super cool. Designs, products, everything has to get member approval. And going viral really didn't help us. You know, people probably listening to this is probably like, think of the inverse, because we had so many people reach out to us that we couldn't contact everyone about member approval.
Yeah.
did contact. We definitely are super users. But I think that also, like, when you think about, like, even like our cap table and stuff like that, we really want to find ways that we can get, you know, our members on the cap. Stuff like that is like at the top of mind for us and for me, and what I think we could do to really empower our audience. So
awesome. Awesome. I always love to ask this question from, you know, the diverse founders that I meet and talk to. There's always a brilliant answer and so much homework for me to do that I'm going to create a separate post about answers. But what are some books or some people that have influenced you the most?
I would go listen to John Hope and probably listen to everything he says twice. Brilliant. Who really knows this stuff. He's done some amazing work with Operation Hope, and he's just a man of wisdom. He really speaks in a way that we had him as a spokesperson for our event up in at the White House, actually. Well, not at the White House, but at Congress. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's very influential in the way that we should see the world. A lot of what we do and what we practice comes from what he has said. So I would recommend just spending time just listening to him.
I love it.
I also read a ton of books, but right now I'm not reading anything too exciting. So I won't recommend anything at the moment, but yeah.
Yeah, I love that. What in terms of, you know, what he said in the past, what has like stuck with you or sticks with you every day? Like in particular, is there some specific quote or mindset or perspective that he shared that you're like, this is something that really, that has stuck with you and continues to stick with you each day?
Yeah, he'll explain it way better than me. And hopefully you'll be able to hear it somewhere from him. But he really highlighted that we're in a moment where, you know, we just came out of a point of like racial inequities, and Jim Crow ended in like the mid 1900s, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
There's people alive who had experienced eradication of Jim Crow laws. And we're kind of like at the point now where, you know, the war on race has turned into a war on capital. Mm-hmm. And everything that you see, like the rappers and the artists and the NBA, like everything's about money, right? And it's a war on money and access to money. And there's, again, going back to economic disparities, you know, I think it's like 50% of America's wealth is sitting in the 1%. There's a war to pull that wealth down into more community. And that battle is really where you see radical ideas come from. It's where you see our politics really get pulled into. Everything gets affected by this war on capital. And he really highlighted that what we're experiencing right now is just truly that battle. So how can you go into this battle in an equitable way? What does this mean for both sides, both parties? And how does this affect America's future? Like, he has really good thoughts on it. Really great speaker. And you, again, would explain that much better than
I love that. And that's such a, you know, noble cause to help you lead in the decision making. It sounds like it does influence, you know, your product decisions, how you view the company and its impact. So thank you so much for being on the show. And last little bit, I always like to have guests plug in their social channels. Where can we support Ultro and its mission and its product growth? Where can we do that?
Yeah, my socials are all the same. It's Mike_Ultro, A-L-T-R-O. If you want to check out our website, I think it's really cool website. It's ALTRO.io, Ultro.io. And reach out to me. My email is michael@ultro.io. Talk startups, investing, anything. Always open to it. So
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Michael. I learned so much about not only what Ultro is doing to impact the community, but also the financial industry. And I'm really excited to see where your product goes from now and until the, I guess, it's handed over to the community. But all in all, thank you so much for being on the show.
Awesome. No, I appreciate you having me.